welcome to another episode of Extra Sequential.
The sixth episode in a series of long-running
comic book rants hosted in Perth by myself, Mladen.
And myself, Chris.
Today we'll be talking about, I guess, comics from our childhood.
Play the harp. This is when the harp and the picture goes fuzzy. Just like that.
Yeah.
Basically, because I'm 10 years older than you, and I grew up with superheroes, and you didn't as much, so we have a lot of different...
We'll have some differing childhood experiences.
It should be interesting, something for everybody.
Yep.
Well, let's get straight into the news.
Week ending 13th of September 2010. Is
yes,
that right?
Yeah. You are right. Woo-hoo. We have not travelled back or forward in time. We have remained where we are.
Not yet, we haven't. There's still time, my friend.
So yep. Fantagraphics sent out an interesting press release.
That's right. A lost graphic novel by beat writer and author of Naked Lunch, William S. Burroughs, written in the 1970s, is finally going to see the light of day. William S. Burroughs is a postmodern author, considered to be one of the most politically trenchant, culturally influential and innovative artists of the 20th century.
Wow.
Thank you, Wikipedia. I know of the book.
I have not. And what is a beat poet? What is a beat?
It's that sort of 60s generation of counterculture.
So he wears
writers.
A beret and has a pipe and...
That's the stereotype, yeah.
Hits bongos.
How
now, brown cow?
Yep. Okay. That might have been white. But it's the only graphic novel he's ever written, and it'll be quite an event. It's called Apuk Is Here, and he did it in the 1970s over a period of 7 years with artist Malcolm McNeil. I think that would have been his first comic as well.
Apuk, so it's
A-H-P-O-O-K Is Here. Yep, that'll be coming out in 2011 in the summer in two volumes. Basically, at that point, the term graphic novel hadn't been coined yet, so they described it as a word image novel.
Okay.
I don't mind that.
Yeah, sounds like something from the 1800s, but yeah.
But at the time, it's basically a single 120-page continuous fold-out. What do you call
it? Like a concertina.
Accordion.
Oh, interesting.
But at that point, no publisher wanted to take the chance on that sort of...
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So, finally gets to see the light of day. So, that's interesting news.
It is indeed.
Keep your eye out, 2011.
There might be a Sandman TV series. There was an attempt with HBO, the American TV network, HBO, I think back in the 90s, if I'm not mistaken.
That's correct, yeah.
And there's been talk over the last week or so that there's been interest again. It's basically just talk at this stage, isn't it?
Sandman, the Vertigo series by Neil Gaiman, not the other Sandman.
No, the one that all the goths...
Or the Spider-Man Sandman. There might be Spider-Man fans out there.
That is true.
Yeah. But Neil Gaiman's supposedly jumping on board to do some of the scripting, and Eric Kripke, the showrunner behind Supernatural, is supposedly at the top of the list to be the showrunner for this series. I know a big screen adaptation has been thrashing around since the late 90s as well, and that's never going to see the light of day either. I think the Death movie, you know, his sister?
Yes.
That was probably closer to development. But it's all kind of talk at this stage, and it's all listed as just in development. You know how the Preacher series on the HBO was in development for so long? So don't get your hopes up just yet.
No, that's true. I don't know how it would go as a TV series. It seems quite a rambling narrative.
It's because it's a lot of standalone stories. I imagine something more like X-Files, maybe.
Yeah, you know, like done in one, episodic in nature.
Yeah, that's how I would approach it, because that's how the novels are set up as well. But gosh, that'll be an interesting one to...
Indeed. Comic-Con, San Diego Comic-Con, which is the biggest pop culture event. I've been lucky enough to be been there twice. Mm-hmm. The tickets for 2011, so the actual event will be on July 2011, at the end of July every year for 4 or 5 days. The tickets for Comic-Con 2011 go on sale on the 1st of November. It's just been announced. So you can go to comiccon.org and buy your tickets. It opens on the Monday, the 1st of November, at like 9 o'clock Pacific Standard Time. So they're quite hard to get a hold of. The preview night, which is on the Wednesday night, I think, has already sold out. So the ticket's about $100 US. So keep your eyes peeled.
$100, is that for the whole...
The 4 or 5 days. So it's you will certainly get your money's worth. I think when I went like 3 years ago, it was like $75. But
are you going to go this year?
Hopefully. Hopefully. Yeah? If tickets next year. Yeah, if tickets
sell
out. When are you paying attention?
No, I didn't realise they sold them a year in advance.
Oh, yeah.
No, that makes sense now that I've seen pictures of the lines and so
forth. It's crazy. Yeah, 125,000, 130,000 people, so... Mm. So, yeah, comiccon.org on November 1 to get your Comic-Con tickets for next year.
And in other manga news this time.
Sure.
Manga artist Takehiko Inoue. That was pretty mangled.
No, I think you do it. You always in good intonation whenever you...
I try. Yeah. I really try.
Your elocution teacher would be proud.
Yeah, thank you. His samurai manga Vagabond, based on the 18th century book Musashi, is on hiatus again. This time due to ongoing health problems, and he'll probably continue his work on his wheelchair basketball manga called Real.
Wheelchair basketball manga?
Yeah.
What, they dunk wheelchairs?
No, he did a basketball manga called Slam Dunk.
Okay.
You know, wheelchair basketball.
Yeah.
It's basically about them dealing with their disabilities and, you know. He doesn't just do action manga, he does kind of, you know, psychological.
His Oracle, their coach or something?
Who?
Oracle and Professor X on competing teams.
No. Quiet, Chris.
Losing interest.
Quiet. But I found an interesting quote by him he did with Eddie. What's the guy who did One Piece? We talked about him a few weeks ago.
Oh, okay, yes.
But they've been having posting up these conversations online, and he was quoted as saying, "The fun moments are diminishing for me. The time I spend drawing wild hair is fun, though. But when I'm making exceptional progress, all the time I spend drawing is enjoyable. But recently, I don't really get that feeling very often. I feel a little as though I may have come to a point where I'm facing an impending crisis."
Wow.
So maybe losing his love for manga. Possibly.
I think it's hard. I mean, I guess he's been doing this series for quite a while, and to keep your motivation, it must be difficult.
Like writing Dave and drawing,
Cerebus, whatever.
Yeah, he pushed through to how many issues?
Yeah, that was like 30 years worth or something ridiculous. So,
yeah.
Yeah, okay. Mm. So I keep waiting for Vagabond Day. Lastly, well, at least from me, Mark Millar, who we talked about a few weeks ago, he's the writer of Kick-Ass. He's got a new series out called Superior, also from Marvel's creator-owned imprint Icon, with artist Lionel Francis Yu. That launches in October.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what he's doing, well, it's just closed off. The winning bid was £3,100 for the name. So basically what happens is Mark Millar's brother is a doctor. And for every series that Mark Millar's written, from Kick-Ass to Nemesis and now to Superior, he's auctioned off the chance to name the lead characters.
So he's no Stan Lee. He doesn't have to name the characters with alliteration.
No. So we don't know what the lead character of Superior is going to be called, but apparently he was. Apparently it's quite apt. I just made up a word. APT. Because this is what Millar told a comic.
It's the opposite of inept. Would that be correct?
Which is what I'm currently experiencing. This is what Mark Millar told Comic Book Resources. The basic idea behind Superior is about a kid who's been diagnosed with multiple sclerosis, getting a magic wish for whatever he desires, and his wish is to become this big screen superhero he's always loved. And basically, Superior is like this character, is kind of tip of the hat to the Golden Age characters like Superman in the 30s and 40s. And so, yeah, so this little kid, he gets a chance to become a robot, and it's kind of like that. It's got robots in it, but it's got robots and aliens and supervillains, set pieces, and it's actually quite an emotional tale, apparently. So,
cool.
Yeah, look out for that one. Superior starts in October.
I think Mark Millar's magazines hit the shelves as well.
Yes, Clint magazine, that was released last week in the UK. We have yet to see it in other parts of the world. But when we do it, we'll certainly talk about it.
I saw these pictures online of, because it's being stocked, you know, in magazine shelves.
Yes.
They had it between the gay men's interest section and I think yacht enthusiasts. And like, you can barely see the top of the title. Just they don't know what to do with it.
No,
so I thought that's pretty hilarious.
Yeah, I think it's going to be interesting because he wants to put comics, and especially English comics, back into the newsagent. And he's got big name celebrity friends like Jonathan Ross and whatever to do that. Yeah, good on him.
So check your gay men's interest section or local yachting enthusiasts for Clint magazine.
All of the above. Gay men's yachting magazine, perhaps. It's a niche in the market. That's the news for this week.
Chris, what have you been reading this week?
Maladdin. Well, I have been reading and watching various things. Okay, that's... No. I watched The Girl
Get
of the Dragon...
Get on with it.
The Girl of the Dragon Tattoo.
Oh, yeah.
Scandinavian, Swedish, one of those. Icelandic, Norwegian, one of those films where they don't speak English.
They're not all the same, Chris.
No. They're based on the Stieg Larsson books, successful.
The current airport choice of book for travelers.
The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo or Twilight that you see on the buses and the trains. The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo is pretty good. Very dark film. Very interesting protagonist. Like, you know, she's a tattooed bisexual pyromaniac woman, and he's like a disgraced journalist, and they team up. And yeah, it's quite. Oh, it's like quite riveted by it. It's a very dark film. Certainly not one for the kids.
I'm imagining a more interesting version of, you know, that girl from NCIS who's like the gothy girl, but better than that.
Yes, basically. And yeah, it's pretty violent and yeah, quite dark, quite a slow pace, but a good independent film.
Is Tom Hanks going to be in the American remake?
No, I'll tell you who will be in the American remake.
You're prepared.
David Fincher is directing the remake.
Is Nicolas Cage in it?
So David Fincher is a good thing, I think.
Yeah, that's good.
Fight Club 7?
Fight Club, and he's The Social Network will be coming out soon, Facebook movie.
Yes, you're right. Daniel Craig is going to be the journalist.
Wow, okay.
And I can't remember who's playing the other person.
He'll probably need to tear his shirt off a few times during the film.
Let's hope. That'll be good for the Yachty magazine cover.
Let's hope.
So, yeah, it's actually quite a good film. And last night I watched Pandorum, which was a new sci-fi film just released. Well, it was actually released a couple of months ago on DVD.
Describe it to me.
In America. It's basically these guys. It's set in the future. This spaceship carries, like, you know, 60,000 bodies or something of the human race, because the overpopulation has basically destroyed Earth. So they go out, they find another planet that's like Earth.
Mm-hmm.
So this one ship is carrying all the hopes of humanity. They go on deep space, hypersleep, whatchamacallit. They wake up and they suffer from this thing called Pandorum, which is basically like the effects of hypersleep. You get a bit paranoid and neurotic. You want to kill people. And it's like mutiny, zombie people running around and stuff, which actually looked quite creepy. I mean, the ending was awesome. I won't spoil it for you, but the ending was great. But like the 2 hours leading up to that, it wasn't anything original. It's got Dennis Quaid in it and Ben Foster and... It steals ideas from like Alien, Mad Max 3, Sunshine, Event Horizon. Mm. It basically takes all these films, and it was actually combined from two other screenplays and kind of mashed into one. So it's not an original film, but the ending is kind of saves it. So if you don't mind a bit of dark sci-fi and don't want anything too astonishing and surprising, Pandorum's the way to go.
If you want a safe sci-fi horror film,
yes. Yeah.
Is it still terrifying in any way?
Not as much as it could have been.
Yeah, fair enough. Is that all you've been...
Watching, yes.
Watching?
You go to what you've been reading.
Because I've read a lot of...
A cookbook or something, what is that?
Yeah, it's pretty cool. I've been reading a lot of comics this week. This is a manga called Oishinbo, which... Oishi is delicious. I don't know what Nbo means. Maybe it means delicious manga. I don't know.
Wasn't that a Hanson song? Mbo.
Mbo. Yeah, okay. Very good.
Mbop, yeah.
What they've been doing with the English translation of this series, which is by Tetsu Karia and Akira Hanasaki, has been... They're not just publishing it in order. They're basically picking out stories which are all themed around the certain types of cuisines.
Okay.
It's kind of an interesting way to do a best of... this series introduction to whatever.
Sure.
That's why I think they called it a la carte. There's a subline under the title there. But this one's all about izakaya, which is my favorite type of Japanese food, which is basically pub food.
Okay.
So it's all...
Fried, greasy, fatty stuff?
Yeah, like stuff you eat while drinking. So it's not your typical Japanese food. Check it out. If you're in Perth, restaurant called Jun, go there.
Okay.
That's good. But basically, you've probably never read a food... comic about food or the adventures of food.
I cannot say that I have.
The series basically is a young journalist. He's got a bit of a finer taste for food. He's been hired to basically write the ultimate menu for his newspaper. So the newspaper's hired him to write the best menu of Japanese food kind of thing as this big publicity stunt, basically. So he goes around to all the restaurants and gets to try all their delicious food and talk about it. Some of the stories are cool. There's one where his best friend... which is a girl and her husband, their relationship's a bit rocky, and he brings them back together through a certain dish, which is like a potato gratin made with yuba. So it's like West and East come together, these two disparate things working together in harmony.
Cool.
And they're like, we've realized this food has brought us together. It's funny though, that he gets really upset that no one thanks him for putting them together. So he's not just a nice guy. It's quite funny. The characters are drawn really simply, as you can
see. Yeah, it's quite cartoony kind of.
But it's kind of cool. You remember
the food's quite detailed, though.
The food's very detailed.
It's interesting. Two different art styles.
Yeah. Well, that's typical in manga, you know, very detailed backgrounds. It's okay. That whole theory of if simple characters you can project yourselves into.
Oh, okay.
So when they're trying the food and they're describing the textures and all that, you can easily project yourself in because you've got this detailed drawing of the food. But if you... It's actually pretty entertaining, so check it out. I'd recommend looking at it if you like your trying different foods, and they show you how to make it and stuff.
Oh, okay.
Roughly, you know. They don't tell you how many minutes to cook it for, but you know, if you're an experienced chef, this would be very fun. Another book, I picked up the first two issues of Grant Morrison and Philip Bond's, how would you pronounce that? Vimanarama.
Vimanarama, baby.
Yeah. it's a good, kind of good quick start to this. I thought it might take a while to get into it, but basically the main character, he's got this arranged marriage coming up, and he's carrying this noose in his back pocket for if the girl's ugly and he doesn't like her, he's going to hang himself.
Wow.
So he's a bit of a drama queen. But so he's meeting his bride. Well, he's meant to be meeting his bride, but it's interrupted when interdimensional kind of Indian demons invade London and start killing everyone.
Wow.
And the Ultra Hadeen arrive. They're like basically the Indian Fantastic Four, led by Rama, Prince Rama, you know, from the Indian legends.
Oh, okay. Yep.
Yep. And Prince Rama also has a crush on the girl who he sees as an incarnation of his lost love. I can't remember her name now. I should know.
Princess Rama?
No, it'll come to me later. So obviously the main guy gets a bit jealous. But it's actually pretty upbeat. It's fun. I find, and the artwork suits it. It's quite simple, but it suits the colourful characters and the events. I thought the Indian mythology is a really good match for superheroes because Indian mythology is very action-packed. It's full of drama and heroism and lots of action.
Okay.
So perfect match for a superhero, well, sort of semi-superhero comic.
Sure.
So it's actually quite fun, so I'm going to try and pick up more issues for $1.
Yeah, that is a bargain.
That is a bargain. God, I've read a lot of comics.
I
picked up Blazing Combat, which is a reissue, not in the same format as the Creepy and Eerie volumes, but from the same publisher.
So these are like mini comics from the 60s and 70s, all about war and stuff?
Yeah, basically, you know, those sort of fat
Commando, like Commando.
Yeah, but bigger format, larger ones. And this one's been put up a Fantasmagraphic book. So yeah, Warren Publishing only had like a very short lived series in like from 65 to 66 of four issues of this comic called Blazing Combat. And the army blocked its distribution because they thought it was anti-American because they were basically a little bit ahead of their time and they were a little bit critical of, say, America's involvement in Vietnam. Not overtly so. They just had a story about a Vietnamese rice farmer in there.
Oh, okay.
Who's basically, like, keeps getting liberated by different armies coming in. He's like, what's the point? The rice isn't growing any better or worse. So
yeah.
It makes no difference to me, except now my family's dead. So it's actually pretty good. And the artworks, I love this kind of stuff.
And it's different wars. It looks like.
Yeah, there's different historical periods. It's not just World War I-II. There's Civil War, I think, there.
Yes.
You might be looking at. I think it's astonishingly good.
There's an interview with James Warren, the publisher, in the back. Which
and Archie Goodwin at the back as well.
Oh, yes, cool.
Yeah. Awesome. So you get a fair bit of for you. It's probably... Yeah, I like it more than the Creepy and Eerie collections.
Okay.
But you've got like almost all the stories are by Archie Goodwin. Covers are by the legendary Frank Frazetta.
Yes.
May he rest in peace.
Indeed.
Since passed on. But there's the interior art by Joe Orlando, Reed Crandall, John Severin, Al McWilliams, Alex Toth, Wallace Wood, and Russ Heath, among others. So, yeah.
Awesome.
Man, I've got so many comics. I'll cut it slightly short.
No, please keep going.
Gosh, Driven by Lemons. Have you?
I've got the book, but I've yet to read it. I know it's by Joshua Cotter.
Yep, Joshua Cotter.
Also did Skyscrapers of the Midwest, which was his kind of breakthrough independent book.
You can flick through this and tell me if that's different to this.
It is. The art style is the same, but I think Skyscrapers had more of a formal narrative. This looks almost like a journal sketchbook.
That's right. Yeah. Well, I think it was written that way. Basically, it's kind of a look into his psychological state, because it's not like a typical story. But instead of sort of being a sort of slice of life about his biography or whatever, you know, it's not in that sort of style. It's sort of letting you into his thoughts a bit. So there'll be pages of just these blue triangles taking over these red squares, and that sort of stretches between his little bunny character who's in a hospital bed, I think, for like trying to kill himself.
Okay.
So it lets you into his mind quite well. There's like a really extended hospital sequence, which is really good. And at the very beginning, he draws four separate times, four full page drawings of the city scene. Okay. And I thought that's just an interesting kind of sketch exercise. He draws it four separate times and in quite a lot of detail.
Wow.
So it's kind of, it really lets you into this kind of weird psychological part. I thought, yeah, it's a good look into someone's mind. And it's been nominated for Harvey and Eisner Awards.
And it's published by Ad House Books. They actually do a lot of good stuff, actually. It's kind of like yellowed, purposely yellowed pages, and it does look like a little smaller journal, doesn't it?
Yeah, that's right. And you can see it's been scanned from a sketchbook because the edges of the pages have a slight sort of mark there. So it looks like he's just sort of done it, sort of
over an experiment. And
I suspect he might have done it sitting in a hospital bed.
Yeah, possibly.
With nothing else to do. But I thought that's really unusual for a comic, and if you want something different from your comics, someone trying something very different.
True.
Read that. I might skip this other book I've read and talk about two documentaries I watched.
Oh, yeah, sure.
One was called In Search of Steve Ditko.
Yep.
And that kind of ties in because I did read my first ever Steve Ditko comics, basically.
Yes, this is a Marvel Visionaries, which is like a big trade paperback collection of some of Marvel's greatest creators. And this is Steve Ditko's version. And he co-created Spider-Man and went on to do Doctor Strange and a whole bunch of other stuff. And
that's
then
right.
Kind of
I think, yeah, Doctor Strange is his creation.
Okay.
I think there's a quote from Stan Lee at the beginning saying they just needed something to fill some pages. Can you make something up?
Yep.
And honestly, I'm not too keen on Steve Ditko. I like Jack Kirby a lot more.
Yeah, Ditko almost seems a more traditional artist.
I find he's a lot more crude. He's got kind of a naive art thing going for him.
Didn't he do Nick Fury, Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D., and he did all weird, fantastic covers? And
I don't know if that was Ditko? Him. I think there was another dude who also did weird kind of spiral shapes and stuff. I like the Doc Strange stories in there because it's more abstract and journeys into the minds of geometrical shapes and such. But the doco was by BBC Four in 2007, and there's interviews with Mark Miller, John Romita Sr., Neil Gaiman, Joe Quesada, Alan Moore, Stan Lee, bunch of others, sort of trying to track him down as well because he's a reclusive figure.
That was hosted by, or created by, Jonathan Ross, the UK TV.
Yeah,
I think
it was. I'd never heard of him until
he's the guy with the lisp and stuff, but he's really famous in England. He's working with Mark Miller on the Clint magazine and that kind of stuff. So, and yeah, his wife, Jane Goldman, wrote the Kick-Ass screenplay and Stardust and now X-Men First Class.
Well, I did not know that.
I'm a wealth of information, a veritable font.
He is, and Chris didn't know what I was going to talk about, so I'm pretty impressed. But his art kind of reminds me of, you know, Fletcher Hanks, who did... In that, it's like kind of willfully and heedlessly inventive, but kind of drawn in this intentionally kind of ugly way. Do you know what I mean?
And Squirrel Girl's in it. Iron Man is
good.
Squirrel Girl.
Squirrel Girl.
Yeah.
Is she famous in the roster of Iron Man
villains?
She's
like a Z-list character. She's actually a hero.
Will we see her in Iron Man 3? Opposite.
Maybe, if you start a Facebook fan page.
Does Scarlett Johansson become Squirrel Girl after... I'm not sold on Steve Ditko just yet. I want to find some of his Mr. A comics.
That was when he was talking about relativism and all that. Because he
there's good and there's bad and there's nothing between.
Because after he left Marvel, he went to DC and he created The Question, just like the faceless guy.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
trench coat, clad.
Who Rorschach was then based on?
Yes, correct. Watchmen. Yes,
but there's a lot of his Question and Mr. A are basically Steve Ditko's personal ideology. There's,
so did they actually talk to Ditko in this doco?
No, Jonathan Ross and Neil Gaiman go to visit him at the end of it. But
And he comes out with a shotgun?
He refuses to be filmed, basically.
Wow.
They do get to go up and meet him and thank him. And he gives them like a pile of comics of his original comics.
Yeah.
So they walk out, they've got these huge smiles on.
Wow.
And they're like, we can't tell you what we talked about, but it was awesome. Like, so you can tell there's a lot of love for the art and stuff. So it's actually a good docker to check out because it's not made by... You know how a lot of these dockers are made by DC or Marvel?
Yeah.
So it seems like let's put the most positive slant we can on them. Yeah. Okay. But that's worth checking out, and you're going to have to find it online because I don't think you can buy it on DVD.
Okay.
Yeah. The other one.
Yep.
Yep. The other one I watched was Mobius Redux, another BBC production, I believe. Okay, cool. A Life in Pictures, and that's obviously about Jean Girard, or Mobius, otherwise known as the famous artist behind, you know, heavy metal.
Yes.
He worked on Pilote, Blueberry.
Yes.
And a lot of film production design stuff, but you probably recognize his style when you see it, kind of surrealist, a little bit sexual, very science fiction style, European, French artist. And there's interviews in the film with Stan Lee and Ki Bilal, because he worked with Stan Lee.
He did.
On a Silver Surfer. Which I've got on order now because it looks awesome.
Yeah, I think that was one of the first original graphic novels back in the 80s, maybe.
Cool.
Yeah.
Mm. But the interviews obviously with Mobius himself. He's not as much of a reclusive figure.
Yep.
H.R. Giger, Jim Lee, Mike Mignola, and they talk about, you know, his work on Pilote, heavy metal, the Dune movie that never happened.
Okay.
Eventually, another one was made by David Lynch, which was garbage.
Yeah.
So, God, I wish we'd seen the, you know, Mobius, Jodorowsky Dune movie.
And what other films did he work?
He did the suit design, the space suit designs on Alien.
Cool.
The first Alien.
Yep.
I have my notes here.
Blade Runner, I think you did, you said.
Well, Blade Runner, Ridley Scott's admitted that he sort of borrowed heavily from a Mobius story.
Oh, okay.
So, that, like, there's this vertical city and, yeah.
The visual style.
He didn't work on it particularly. He did design work on The Fifth Element.
Oh, yes.
He did all the set and costume design in Tron.
Ah.
Yeah. But the interview is pretty cool, and they do a good job of bringing his art to life, kind of in the pictures and stuff.
Okay.
And I'll lend it to you.
Mobius Redux.
Mobius Redux.
Cool.
Check it out.
Very quickly, I have been reading Thor. Thor for Asgard is number one of a 6-issue series, written by Robert Rodi and art by Simon Bianchi, who doesn't speak English, but his... The story is not great, but it's basically Thor by himself in Asgard, and so there's no superhero action. It's more of a Lord of the Rings types style story, but it's definitely worth buying purely for the art. I met actually Simon Bianchi when I was in Comic-Con and got a print off him. Awesome guy and awesome artist. Look at that art, Maladin. He's like a very fluid, fantasy style.
Oh, the cover actually looks like the art inside.
It does.
I like that.
Yes, it's
nice. Oh, it suits that. Yeah, it does have a whole fantasy thing.
Yeah.
He's deserving of it. This sort of character, you can't draw in this kind of Spider-Man style.
No, that's right. So, yeah.
Definitely can't do him in a Steve Ditko style.
It's a 6-issue miniseries. It's quite fluid, the art. It's very, a lot of interesting space with, like, white, a lot of layout kind of experimentation.
Got a Conan thing going on in this.
Yeah, that's true. The other one I've been reading is the Wolverine relaunch. X-Men just relaunched as well, so there's a new number one X-Men, which had 2 spelling mistakes in the first issue. But anyway, so this so Wolverine,
they spelled Wolverine
one.
Wrong.
Wolverine. Yes, they did actually.
Wolverine.
They missed out the L.
Oh.
But yeah, Wolverine number one is written by Jason Aaron, who I think you
Jason
Scalped.
Scalped. I think he did a comic called The Other Side. Yep.
So this has got a backup tale as well, with art by. Jason Latour, also written by Jason Aaron, which is more, it's almost Samurai Jack kind of style art with the Silver Samurai, who's a classic
cool.
X-Men character. But yeah, Wolverine number one, basically he goes to hell. That's it. So it's okay. The art is by Renato Guadis. So the colouring's quite almost a bit restrained and a bit understated, but Wolverine basically goes to hell. So it's kind of interesting. We'll see where it goes from there. Wolverine's been relaunched and redone so many times. He's had a rather busy life. But, as a new beginner to Wolverine, I was like, what's going on here? He's got a girlfriend now, and who's this Wraith guy? It's got the Wraith, who was played by Will.i.am in the Wolverine Origins film.
Was he made up for the film?
Yes, who I thought was a... No, he was in the comics.
Oh, okay.
I thought he was a teleporter, but he...
It would have surprised me, like, that Wraith was such a popular character from Wolverine Origins.
No. So here, Wraith is...
Does he look like Will.i.am in this?
Kind of. He's a pastor, and he's looking after his church, and then Wolverine kind of gets possessed. So Wolverine's body is in hell, but then demons possess Wolverine's body and wreak havoc with it on Earth.
Fergie's in the next X-Men movie.
Sex-Men? Interesting idea. Next X-Men. Yeah, it's an interesting idea. we'll see where it goes from here.
Can you explain something to me? I'm just looking
probably
at the
probably not,
now.
But...
Oh, okay, the swords are stabbed through him. I thought he had katanas on his back. I'm like, but why? He has sword hands.
Yeah.
But no, he's been stabbed by katanas and he's like, I don't care, whatever.
The other thing I have been reading, yes, is a new series, just completely changing the topic, is a new four-issue miniseries by our publisher, Akaya. It's called Lucid. It's kind of like almost like a Hellboy, like a secret paranormal kind of investigation.
BPRD.
So it's written by Michael McMillian, who apparently is an actor in True Blood. Don't ask me who he plays because I don't watch his show.
Oh, you don't Michael Shelley, McMillian. Who does Michael McMillian play? Someone from True Blood.
Seeking Google advice.
Sorry.
And Weish, I can't even say her last name, but she does the art. Apparently, this is her first American comic book. Mm-hmm. So basically, it's centered on this guy, Matthew D.W., who's like a combat mage. Mm. Seems like a Warren Ellis.
Combat mage.
Warren Ellis idea. Yeah. And he works for Majestic Intelligence. Yeah, it's interesting. It's kind of got a breezy, kind of manga, elongated kind of manga approach. The faces sometimes look a bit shonky. But yeah, it's basically like these secret agents working around for this secret magical organization. And centuries ago, Merlin set up this barrier to stop Earth being invaded by this other interdimensional people. Now that barrier's breaking down. It's interesting. It's especially it's got three executive editors, so I don't know what that means. But one of them is Zachary Quinto, who was in Heroes and played Spock in the Star Trek film, because it's made by his Between the Door production company. Before the Door production company. So yeah, it's okay. It's nothing mind blowing, but vaguely interesting nonetheless. I don't know if we'll pick up the second issue.
Got a bit of a Aeon Flux maybe look about it.
Aeon Flux, that's a good approach. Yeah, that's a good
definitely a Peter Chung influence.
Yeah, that's true. That is what we've been reading.
And next we'll be talking about our childhood comics,
if we can remember our childhood.
Okay, out there in Marvelland, face front, this is Stan Lee speaking. You've probably never heard a record like this before, because no one would be nutty enough to make one with a bunch of offbeat artists, so anything is liable to happen.
Hey, who made you a disc jockey, Lee?
Well, Jolly Jack Kirby, say a few words to the fans, Jackson.
Okay, a few words.
By the way, Jack, the readers have been complaining about Sue's hairdo again.
What am I supposed to do? Be a hairdresser? Next time I'll draw her bald-headed.
Boy, I'm glad we caught you when you were in a good mood.
What you just heard were the upbeat sounds.
Yes, and dulcet tones of Stan Lee and Jack Kirby, two of the architects of the Marvel Universe, and the Merry Marvel Marching Society, which is something made for fans. Stan Lee, back in the 60s, was very open, and he always encouraged people to write in letters and that kind of stuff. And the staff has kind of got in this phone booth.
The recording booth.
And recorded this little... So all the people's voices, I think most of them are actually people that worked at Marvel in the 60s.
I believe you sent away a little bit of money and you'd get back a record.
Yes.
With a short little record hearing all your favourite creators.
Nice one.
Gosh, you wouldn't be able to do that stuff these days.
No.
I think it's a magical time, isn't it?
It is.
And that leads into our magical memories.
We are flicking through old comics from the 70s, 80s and 90s.
For me, it's mostly 90s.
Yeah, thank you, Maladin. I know I'm old. You don't have to remind me of every possible opportunity. You'll be my age one day, and then he'll be laughing.
Yeah.
Okay. So we thought we would go on a nostalgic trip and talk about comics that kind of meant something to us, that shaped us into the people that you hear before you.
Hear before you. That's a good
one. When I was a young lad, I was born in 1976.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Older than I thought. I'll never stop.
So we didn't really have, there weren't any comic shops in Perth. When I was in the 80s, there wasn't comic shops until the early 90s in the city. And I lived an hour and a bit from the city. So my mum was quite a voracious reader when growing up. So we used to go to this place called Beth's Book Exchange in Armidale, which is this huge place above a Chinese restaurant.
That's not the same as Elizabeth's Book Exchange,
no,
is it?
No. And next door was, which is Elizabeth's, is a chain.
I was just thinking Beth's short for Elizabeth.
So okay. No, I don't think so. I think it's just a one-off. You can actually see Beth's stamp on some of my comics here.
I hate when they do that.
And right next door to this book exchange was a VHS shop, which also sold Beta. That's how old it was.
Do you have any Beta tapes at home?
I do not. We were VHS through and through.
Loyal VHS fans.
Yeah. So we didn't actually get new comics in newsagents until about like the late 80s. So mm-hmm. what we got when I was a kid was a lot of Australian editions.
Which yeah, is they reprint them, yeah.
Black and white, often reprints. And I don't think they seem to follow any numbering system. It seemed to be quite random. But I did get some from Beth. One of the first comics I ever picked up was The Amazing Spider-Man, number 106. And this was published in 1971 by Stan Lee, who we talked about earlier, and John Romita, senior, not junior. And yeah, so Romita is one of the best Spider-Man artists. He actually followed Steve Ditko after Steve Ditko left. So Romita jumped on board on Amazing Spider-Man number 39 and kind of had an intermittent run.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I read this again last night because I'm not someone who rereads his comics. So a lot of memories came flooding back. So this is quite a quick read. Great art. Romita has a really good sense of just body. Obviously, this is set in the 70s. So there's a lot of flares and bell bottoms and people, you know.
I like that, though.
With headbands and that kind of stuff. But there's a lot of stuff that happens. So there's a lot of overlapping plot threads. So Flash Thompson is back from Vietnam and he's kind of getting flashbacks. J. Jonah Jameson is protesting at these new security cameras that are being put around New York. Professor Smythe.
Topical.
Professor Smythe is the bad guy. He's like an evil scientist who has goons working for him. And he's the one who controls these.
Is it Smithy or Smythe?
I think it's Smythe. It's got an E on the end. Who controls them because he put all these security cameras around because he wants to see Spider-Man unmask, which he does, which is pretty Spider-Man unmask, and then a security camera catches him, which is pretty dumb. You'd think you'd unmask in the privacy of your own bedroom, rather.
Does he make a pun like, the spider has been caught?
You're now in my web.
Yeah, that's good.
So Spider-Man takes his mask off, and it's even on the cover. Revealed the face of Peter Parker. How does a hero get out of this? Squash goes the spider.
Revealed the face of Peter Parker.
I just said that.
I know, I just love how much words are on the title.
There are a lot of words, aren't there? They don't really do that anymore.
Yeah.
And then Peter goes and visits Dr. Kurt Connors, who turns into the Lizard. And then what Peter does is quite ingenious. He makes a fake face of himself and then takes that face off. So then Professor Smythe says, hey, earlier when I saw you take your mask off, that was a fake face. So there's also stuff in there. Mary Jane Watson is in it, but she's kind of in an on-again, off-again relationship with Harry Osborn. And so it's got some non-superhero stuff in there as well. Mm. It's got lots of, you know, exposition and typical Stan Lee kind of, you know, lots of little asides, like stuff that happened previous issues, just little caption boxes and whatnot. But, yeah, cool. It's quite an entertaining read. And now... And there's some awesome adverts as well. These ads are awesome, such as too skinny, new scientific discovery helps you put on weight and all this kind of stuff.
I love it.
There's lettuce pages, which are pretty awesome.
Does that one have the facial hair one?
Yes, this one has an ad for facial hair. Enjoy an exciting, romantic look. Impressive anytime. Quick change to suit your mood. All three, $6. Send for mustache, sideburns and Van Dyke. At once, simply check the colour you want or send a sample of your hair and leave the matching to our expert. Mail coupon now. A deal is securely offered on in seconds.
Some poor woman had to open envelopes filled with hair.
And then match the colour.
Okay, do I match it to black or yellow? Those are the options we have.
There's also one for be taller. If you could grow 2 to 6 inches taller in 1 month, would you spend 25 cents to discover how? There's some pretty awesome ones.
Wow.
Did I read out the too skinny one already?
Yeah. You did. read it again. Oh, these ads are amazing. Now it's just one-page ads for video games. It's kind of sad.
Yeah, true. So the X-ray specs, only $1.
Yeah. I remember awesome. The same experience flicking through my first comics, which would have been, you know, Phantom ones, I guess.
Oh, yes.
And they always had ads for a Phantom leather jacket.
Okay.
I looked at it recently, and it's about $600 or something crazy like that.
Wow.
So, really, it's just for obsessives.
Well, this has got, you know, like, how to become a game warden. Have your poem set to music. Or the 17 different triangles for 25 cents. Hey, the fun never ends.
A corn chip, you get. Oh, my gosh.
So
it's a real scam.
So, yeah, as I mentioned earlier, it's got some interesting little relationship stuff. And Stan Lee's dialogue is pretty corny, but interesting. So in this point of the early 70s Spider-Man, Peter Parker is going out with Gwen Stacy, who we went out with before, Mary Jane Watson, the redhead seen in the movies.
Mm-hmm.
So we thought we'd just read the first two panels.
Okay, and, which one am I?
You've got the long hair, so you can be Gwen Stacy.
Okay.
And I'll be Peter Parker.
I'm prettier too.
I'm rocking out in an orange suit and some platform shoes.
Wow. I've got sort of almost knee-high red boots, kind of a stripy red jacket. Just imagine me, okay?
Yes.
Beautiful, luscious, long blonde hair. Illusion. Imagine. As Michel Gondry would say, just imagine. Okay, good. You start.
Gwendy, do you have to look so voomy? I'm only human.
Don't fight it, man of mine. You male, me female. That's the name of the game.
The name of the game is love, lady. I'm off my rocker over you.
Careful, darling. I think you're trying to tell me something.
Yeah, so that's how people in Marvel Comics talked in the 1970s. So it was actually quite a fun read, I must say. Obviously, my copy is like, it's not going to be worth anything, but there's an interesting, in the letters pages at the back, someone saying he picked up a Fantastic Four number one and now it's worth $40. And Stan Lee's saying, yeah, that's hang on to your comics, they're worth something. But I did a quick Google search and Fantastic Four number one now is worth anything from $2,000 to $119,000, depending on the grade.
I bet that kid's mum threw them all away.
Yes, quite and possibly.
If they're covered in stamps or like a big sticker that says Beth's Bookstore or
something. Oh, they're worthless. So mine's really? Got like 10 cents written on it. It's like the paper.
It's also an
torn.
Australian edition, so it's probably...
No, actually, this is the original one.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Maybe some like... Some
Beth has standards.
G.I. Joe came back from the Vietnam War and managed to pick this up in America and came back to Perth. I don't know. But yeah, so Amazing Spider-Man.
Did you say some G.I. Joe?
G.I. Joe, yeah.
Yeah, it's not what the...
G.I.
Yeah, that's not what that core of the army is called.
American Heroes, baby.
My turn.
Go.
My first comics were hand-me-downs, for sure.
Okay. From who?
My dad.
Okay.
Almost exclusively. He has a, you know, full set of Asterix comics and at the time, nearly a full set of Lucky Luke comics. They're
okay.
Both French comics from about the 60s, 70s and to today in Asterix's case.
That's true.
And I always have fond memories of reading. I think those for me were the first time I ever really had a realization of other countries. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like when you're a kid, you don't think about, hey, there's other countries and people there are different and have a history.
Eat different food and speak different language.
Yeah, for sure. And Asterix, you know, he tours around the globe. So as a kid, you get that adventure sense, like, oh, he's going all these cool places. And I enjoyed the comedy then. I still do now in a different level, maybe. Chris is like, oh, it's good, all right? It's good. I'm going to defend it.
I believe you.
Yeah. But in those days, it would come out in a weekly form, you know, on half page, just in a comic magazine, like, you know. And so my dad had ones which were cut out and then stapled together.
Okay.
As well as they put out the album when it's all done.
Oh, yes.
Basically, your trade paperback, basically, so there'd be no ads.
Yes.
And I remember our Croatian editions had these really dodgy-looking covers, which made me suspect that maybe they couldn't be bothered buying the rights to print the cover.
It's like you see like those Indian film posters and they look nothing like Tom Cruise or whatever.
It's basically like they cut out a picture from within the comic and blew it up. And with like a plain coloured background and like the most ugliest looking covers. And usually they'd pick a picture at random. So there'd be like one character who's maybe in one panel and he'd be on the cover.
Yes, that's Asterix.
Why is that guy there? And you're like, I guess they just tried to pick. Someone in editing just went through and he'll do.
Yeah.
Sad days. But those have such fond memories.
But it didn't deter you from a lifelong love, which continues to this very day.
Well, I think my comic history is different to yours in that I had a long period where I didn't read any at all. And that would have been after being a kid till like late high school. I know, right? But I'm again pulling out the Phantom and just flipping through. They have their ads as well. Yeah, here's the Phantom style jacket.
Oh yeah, cool.
Don't they look trendy? Step out in Phantom style. This fantastic range, it's PH for fantastic, range of quality jackets contains the ultimate Phantom fashion accessories available. In these days you could order the skull ring and the other ring.
Wow, $550.
That's what $550 for a freaking jacket.
This does say Phantom Reefer jacket. Is it made of hemp or something?
There's two options. There's like a college-style jacket, you know, with a different type of sleeves and that.
Yes.
And then there's probably a 100% synthetic leather jacket for $550. And this was like in mid-90s, I assume.
Yeah, wow.
So what a freaking ripoff. I have a vague memory of maybe suggesting to my parents that I want one and them just laughing at me when they saw the price. And as a kid, I had no concept of that's price. A lot of money. It's not like a 62-cent... get instructions on how to get taller.
No, it's free.
I wonder what their instructions were.
Stretch.
Stretch.
Daily.
Miss Stan Lee says stretch. But my other childhood comics, gosh, like no superhero stuff, I've got to say.
No.
I have a Bartman comic.
Yes.
That's kind of a superhero.
The superhero alter ego of Bart Simpson.
Yep. On the cover, you have Lisa and Maggie also in superhero outfits.
Well, it's not really an outfit. It's just something over their eyes.
Yeah, basically. I don't know what good a baby superhero is going to do. Honestly.
What about Lone Wolf and Cub?
He had, like, knives and stuff. Maggie Simpson just has, like, a little...
There you go. Folks, straight from the mouth of Maladra, knives without babies are no good to anyone.
Yes.
Or babies without knives.
There's an ad for Pog glow caps.
I remember Pogs. They were like kind of circular trading cards. And was there a game? You flicked them or something?
I don't know anyone who played the game. Because if you lost, you had to lose some of your Pogs. And that would be like, why would I?
Yeah.
What? No.
Yeah.
That's like, I guess kids do it with Yu-Gi-Oh or whatever these days. It's the same thing, except they were a lot cheaper then.
That's true.
Even then, it was just a piece of cardboard with a picture printed on it. Probably far too much money for what you're actually getting.
I remember Pog shops.
A whole shop for Pogs?
Yeah.
My gosh.
That was a craze.
In this particular Bartman comic... these are all by Bongo Comics, and they knew how to find the right... Like, Bongo and Tops, we were saying before, they knew how to find the right... franchise to cash in on. I found some old X-Files comics, for example.
Yes, yes.
But in this one, I think Bart breaks his leg, so Lisa has to take over with Maggie, and they use some sort of magic shtick, like, you know, those rings that...
Magicians use.
Yep, basically. Here's Maggie pouring a beer.
Wow. Actually, I think it looks like chocolate milk.
It's a beer.
Okay.
It's a beer glass.
Brown beer.
It never runs out. Yeah. Have you ever had a beer before? It's probably a Guinness. It's a Guinness, all right?
Right, it's this magical brew of which you speak.
A brown drink. Yeah, it's reading back now. The art's pretty atrocious.
Yeah, it's pretty bad, isn't it?
Yeah,
that is better now. I've read Simpsons comics in the last few years, and it's a lot better.
Mm. Did you want to have another look at one of yours?
Sure. The first comic I bought with my own money was X-Men Annual Number 12, 64 full color pages from Marvel. Again, came out in 1988, so I would have been 12.
Mm.
Yeah, this was, $1.75 American.
Was that a lot? Well, how much did you spend? Sorry, you said it already, didn't you?
No, I didn't say the price because I can't remember. It doesn't have a price on it.
Probably would have been like a dollar.
I got this from the newsagent.
Yeah.
And it's pretty good. It's written by Chris Claremont, who did a lot of the best X-Men stories.
He did New Mutants. He did, yeah.
Yep.
I might mention Chris Claremont later when I get to one of my others. So,
yeah. Art by Art Adams. So it's kind of cartoony, but Art Adams is pretty cool. And this is a very fun read. So basically the X-Men, because like the first few pages has got Storm with big, you know, leather jacket and white hair, as she is. And she's flying, and this is when the X-Men had a home base in the Australian outback.
Yeah,
I mean, it was an Aboriginal mutant called Gateway. So, it's pretty good. It's pretty epic tale. There's this big guy in a purple armor who's like a scientist hero, the high evolutionary. So they meet up him, and then they kind of battle this guy Terminus, who I was thinking, but that is an awesome, cool design. Here we go. Terminus shows up on the scene.
Terminus?
He's that guy, big, huge giant with a dome head, and he goes, "You thought me slain, fools, now learn to your peril how wrong you were, for no world can escape from, nor any power stand against, the wrath of Terminus."
It's hilarious, and then the next panel has...
him being shot in the face.
Yeah, a Shazam sound effect, and a bullet to the face.
So it's pretty fun. So Wolverine was in his brown and tan costume. Longshot, whose power was like good luck, he was in love with Dazzler, who's the light lady. Who was
doesn't
like
Domino have the same power?
Disco queen. Yeah, pretty much. Mm. So in there, and there's a backup tale by the same creative team called I Want My X-Men, featuring Mojo, who's this big fat alien ruler guy who's like half naked and has like dreadlock cable things. And basically he creates TV shows for his alien planet that he's a dictator of. And in his reality, the X-Men died in the last show, so he has to create replacements.
Okay.
So his people come around, so there's like an all-female version of the X-Men, and then he dumps them. And
I like the female Wolverine.
Yeah, who wouldn't? And then there's like an all-robot Transformers version.
What's this one?
And then there's like a fetishist one where fishnet stockings and... yeah, very leggy. And then there's one...
where they're all pigs?
Where they're all animals.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
As lovable, as adorable, as irresistibly commercially cute as can be. Consider the marketing possibilities.
I like the Miss Piggy-looking one.
Yeah, and Colossus is like an ape, and Storm's like an eagle.
It's like Beast Wars.
Kind of stuff. It's pretty cool. And then the X-Babies, so which are pretty much exactly how it sounds. So they come around and they're like, get up to mischief. So, yeah, it's a pretty... another cool story back from the 80s. So, yeah, the art's pretty good, and the kind of exposition is a lot of... there's no captions like nowadays. It's all, you know, people are talking out loud. Now I'm going to show you my mutant powers when I got... there's a lot of exposition within the dialogue and the thought balloons. So, which made it easier for people like me that had never really read any of the X-Men before, but it was kind of vaguely familiar with their cartoon show back in the 80s before the one in the 90s hit. So,
oh, for sure.
That was quite a good comic, and the art still stands up today.
It doesn't look too bad, actually. I like the look of that one.
Yeah.
Should I go on a completely different tangent now?
Please do.
Oh. This is one I remember having as a kid. Beavis and Butthead.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter what issue it is. They're all roughly the same. The old MTV show, Marvel Comics, used to put out... obviously.
Just from Marvel.
Marvel. Wow. 96.
Wow.
I didn't mention it yet, but I was born in 86, so I'm 10 years younger than Chris. So all my comics are basically 90s stuff.
Yeah.
There's Daria. In this one, there's several stories, I believe. There's one where it's obviously Easter, and Beavis and Butthead, I guess they steal everyone's Easter eggs, and there's probably poo jokes. It's pretty puerile. Even at the time, I knew it was puerile, and I was I kind of been that old, like 10 years old if it was 96. And even then, I was thinking, oh, I'm too old for this.
Yeah.
it's pretty dumb, but it's still funny in its way. I love the... I don't know what you call it. Is that the onomatopoeia?
The
is that what you call the sound effects?
Yeah.
They render them with a lot of love and attention.
Gusto.
Yeah, they put like... some of the words here, they've coloured them pink and then put little hairs on them, so the words look like flesh. It's pretty bizarre. There's a lot of nose-picking humour.
Yeah.
There's a principal getting hit in the nads. Clump. Oh, Beavis and Butthead. Quality stuff. And right at the back, Chris might appreciate this.
Juggernaut?
There's a bit at the end where Beavis and Butthead are reading a Juggernaut comic, they're commenting along the way, like, oh, does he juggle his nuts? Yeah. Okay. Me too. You know, that's the voice. That's the best I can do. And then they talk about his butt at the end. I don't know.
Well, that's one thing you don't want to talk about with Juggernaut.
His butt.
Yeah, he'll get you, baby.
It's all classy stuff. Oh, boy. Not as good as Chris's selections. Oh, there's a fart joke right at the front.
No,
it's dry diarrhea.
Dry diarrhea. Oh, is that play on Daria's name?
Yeah, I think so.
Maybe.
They've got pegs on their noses because their fart smell.
Right. Minutes of distracting entertainment.
Yep.
Back in the mid-90s.
Why did I read this?
Well, you know.
I think I got it in a show bag. A lot of my comics are show bag comics.
That's
true. I wonder if that's a Perth-specific thing. But here we have something called The Royal Show.
Yes.
Which is basically a farm and trade show.
Yes.
Which has rides. And you can get show bags which have lollies, those Garfield dolls with the plunger hands that you stick up on the windshield.
Yes.
They all had that.
Yeah.
And they all had a comic, usually a Phantom comic.
Yeah.
Or whatever crap they could find.
Something not good.
Whatever the newsagents couldn't sell
would
have been in the show bag. So I have a lot of Phantom comics from that. Probably a Bartman, and this Beavis and Butthead I blame on a show bag.
Well, it's probably funny when you were ingesting sugar.
Yeah.
X-Factor 23 and 24 were the first two consecutive issues I got by husband and wife team Louise and Walter Simonson, also from Marvel.
Hmm.
So Louise wrote X-Factor from number 6 to number 64 in 1991. Then she moved to New Mutants, which was another mutant title from Marvel, where she co-created Cable with Rob Liefeld. And her run on X-Factor, was basically the original X-Men. So, because X-Men by this point in the late 90s, these two issues were published in 87, 88. the X-Men. That was like heaps of them, you know. Mm-hmm. So X-Factor was a new series created for the original X-Men, which is Beast, Iceman, Cyclops, Jean Grey, and Angel, the guy with the wings. So X-Factor follows that original team. And it's pretty good. So, yeah, Louise Simonson and her husband, Walter Simonson, whose art is very angular but quite in your face and kind of Kirby-esque, but not exactly. So, yeah, this is quite a pivotal run because this is what introduced Apocalypse. He was one of the first mutants and it went on to be one of the main X-Men bad guys. Angel transformed into Archangel in these two issues, and he's been my favourite X-Men character ever since.
Hmm.
So, again, I mean, there's a lot of characters that I'm like, what's happening? But I remember reading these and thinking, oh, cool, so one story continues to the next issue.
Mm.
And I saw Angel transform from Angel in issue 23, who the X-Men thought he was dead, they committed suicide at that point, but he came back, changed
by a far more 90s
by
looking
the evil Apocalypse into Apocalypse of Death, the personification of death, and it actually ends with a quote from the Book of Revelation in the Bible, so that's pretty cool. So it's kind of the Archangel has been brainwashed and now he's been turned against his former enemies, and there's even an ad in here for the Goonies 2.
There's a lot of text on there.
A Nintendo Entertainment System game.
Whoa.
So, yeah, this is pretty, it's a fun read, and the exposition flows throughout the dialogue and the story, so you can kind of still follow what's happening. And, yeah, it's pretty cool.
There's the big Beth's book exchange on the cover, ruining it all.
Again.
And they put the price sticker right in front of the X.
Yeah.
Oh.
And the X-Men are in their original costumes, which I like, so they're pretty much just, you know, unitards, just one-piece leotards, but they're pretty cool.
Mm. Which we might get to see in the 60s...
yeah, that's true.
...based X-Men Origins movie.
That's true.
Which could be garbage, but if they do the cool outfits, I mean, that could be pretty...
Just reminds me how much has changed. Like, Beast is still in his human form here, and he's been transformed lately, so he's got a lot more strength, but he's losing his intelligence.
Explain what happened. Okay, I've always wondered if that was just...
I can't remember how he changed. I think Apocalypse may have changed Beast as well, but basically he went from normal, burly, acrobatic human or mutant, and then he kind of transformed. He had blue skin with a bit of hair, and now he almost looks like a lion slash cat. But I haven't been following the X-Men titles for the last few years. But X-Factor from the 80s, good series.
I think I might mention... before I get into that, I will mention Mad Magazine, because that was...
Oh, yeah.
Probably for a lot of kids who maybe don't have the attention span to read a whole comic, it's probably the first time you see a lot of comic art, and some
That's
of it's not bad actually.
No, it's pretty
some
good.
Of it's quite nice,
and I've got quite a collection of ads as well, and they were quite funny, and I was always impressed that Sergio Aragonés could always draw the little
the strips around the
strips in the borders.
So yeah, there was a lot of rereading quality in these, because you could always go back, and the fold-ins everyone remembers. Oh, it's a Windows 95 reference. Topical.
Yes.
But in Australia, they would republish, I guess, American Mad comics and then just pick and choose the good ones. And then there'd be a small Australian team doing just some stuff to fill in here and
jokes
there.
Jokes about Bob Hawke or something.
Basically. There's a Mission Impossible spoof.
Wow.
And I think this was at the Olympics, so they probably found a comic from the 70s about the Olympics and chucked that in as well. Yeah, so you can tell the newer ones, they're not as good.
Yeah.
But, I think this is probably the first time. So, obviously, Spy vs. Spy. Do you remember Spy vs. Spy?
Yes, I do.
Oh, man.
Yes, black and white spies shooting each other. And
who would you root for?
Well, that's not really a good one and a bad one, because they're both trying to kill each other.
Yeah, and it would usually be like, oh, he's going to get it. Oh, no, he's not. Oh, yes, he is. And, you know, that was usually the twist ending in Spy vs. Spy. I think I always liked the black spy more. I liked his outfit.
Because he looked like a vampire?
Yeah. Oh, it was a zit joke on the back.
And how?
Gross.
That is gross.
Ew, probably about the same time I bought that Beavis and Butthead comic, I'd imagine.
You would have loved this.
Zit jokes. Oh, boy. Preteen humor. But enough about that. I do want to mention the first ever superhero comics I remember reading.
Yeah.
Okay. Showbags.
Again.
Okay. Here I got New Mutants. This is after Chris Claremont's excellent run, which I picked up since.
This might have been a relaunch then, because this is number 3 from the 90s, so it wouldn't have been the original run, but it would have been maybe series 2 or something?
It would be series 2, and this is number 3 of 3 of Truth or Death, and this was the first superhero comic I read. So for the end of the story, it took me about maybe 20 reads to understand what was happening.
Yeah.
It, at the beginning, they help by giving you like a big open page thing that fills you in on all the plot. Which
Marvel did that in their a lot of their superhero titles in the 1990s because their stories were so convoluted. So they do a fold-up page listing the characters and listing what happened in the previous issues.
Mm.
Whereas like in the comics like X-Factor that I mentioned before, a lot of the exposition was handled in the dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
Like Apocalypse, I know you did this, 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 and this, but you won't do that again.
Yeah.
Kind of stuff.
But I find that sometimes isn't good if the artist can't quite tell you who's saying what when.
No, and there can be a lot of dialogue because there's a lot of catch-up to play.
And this one was extra confusing because what happens is the New Mutants team travels, yes. I think, back in time to meet the old Chris Claremont New Mutants team. So there was the characters twice, and it took me so long to get that. So they all have slightly different hairstyles.
So
you see, there's that chick there, and then later on, she has slightly longer hair.
Oh,
and I'm
okay.
meant to be able to tell that apart, being like a 12-year-old or a 10-year-old or something. So
we need name tags.
So maybe that put me off superhero comics at an early age, being confused.
Maybe you prefer poo and zit jokes.
Yeah.
There's no explanation necessary for those.
You got to admit, like, say something like this, because there wouldn't have been a cartoon in any of these characters.
No.
I would have had no idea what was going on.
No, that's right.
So I think eventually I kind of dug it, but yeah, probably not the best first taste of it. Since now I really like Chris Claremont's run on this title especially. Here I have a What If X-Men Lost Inferno. What's Inferno?
Inferno was, you're going to ask me a lot of questions that I don't know because this is during the period in the 80s, but I think Inferno was one of those, I don't know if it was it a vampire-related story? Or
I think demons, because there's some sort of gateway to hell.
In the 80s, well, ever since Marvel had been around, well, ever since the, I guess the 80s is when it really kicked off, they'd have, so there was like the Mutant Massacre, then there was like the Fall of the Mutants, and there was storylines that were crossed over multiple titles, usually X-Men or Spider-Man. Inferno was one of those titles where it's a big, massive story and scope that took a lot of different series to tell, and Inferno was one of them. And this is a What If series, which Marvel don't do anymore, but it was, what if the X-Men lost the Inferno battle.
Yeah.
Did it make any sense? Probably not.
Not a whole lot. What was fun about it is they basically got every single Marvel character and either turned them into demons,
okay.
So they were fighting all the other Marvel characters, and then like towards the end, everyone dies.
Yeah.
And it's pretty... I'll find this page. There's someone in... I think Doc Strange incinerates Wolverine, so he turns into like...
Cool.
Just an adamantium skeleton fighting Jean Grey.
It's cool.
Which is one of the coolest things I've seen.
Yeah.
But another confusing one for me.
Yeah, that's What If titles. They were good, like alternate universe kind of spins on classic Marvel storylines, which they don't do anymore. Mm. But it is made for the diehard fans.
Here's Wolverine as a demon with a whip enslaving humanity.
With demonic horses.
Yeah. And right at the end, I do believe Doc Strange and Jean Grey are like the only humans left alive. And they
have a baby.
They have. Oh no!
Wow.
What's her face? The blonde girl here has the Storm, Johnny Storm's baby.
Oh, okay. Yep. Cool.
I'm surprised I remembered any of that.
Wow.
And right at the front, this won't mean anything to you, Chris, but there's an ad for one of the worst Nintendo games ever, Bayo-Billy.
No, it doesn't ring any bells.
It's a torturous game. I feel sorry for any kid who bought that. I've talked enough about that.
All right, last.
I want to hear about this. This is awesome.
This is awesome. This is Superman versus Muhammad Ali. I don't know how I got this. This is quite a rare. Well, it would be collectible if it wasn't completely in tatters and had scribbles all over it. Again, this was.
Did you draw mustaches on the characters?
This is something that I got from Best Book Exchange, and I think this might actually even be. No, I think this might be the original rather than a reprint. This was published in 1978, Superman versus Muhammad Ali, yes, the boxer. And this was kind of a classic DC storyline. It's been out of print for ages, and the main reason for that is by the huge cover. It's a large format comic, so it's probably about four times the size of a normal comic. Mm. It's quite a few pages.
Yeah, it's bigger than a 2000 AD, I'd say.
Yeah. So the cover has Superman and Muhammad Ali boxing each other in boxing rings, surrounded by a huge crowd that...
full of famous people from the 70s?
Full of famous people, and some of those famous people include the Beatles, the Jackson 5, Christopher Reeve, a bunch of DC superheroes, DC and Warner Brothers employees, Frank Sinatra, Pelé, Jerry Garcia, Sonny and Cher. There's a whole bunch of different people on there. I think the president at the time, and so...
Man.
Because of the likeness and the rights issues.
Oh, and Alfred E. Newman from Mad Magazine.
From Mad Magazine. And I think that might even be Harry Fonz. And
oh, he's got a mustache. Like, that can't be him.
No, maybe not.
But it's really easy to spot the Jackson 5. Look for the five huge afros and, like, the only true. Black people in the audience. Yeah, oh, no, there's a few others.
So this wasn't reprinted since its original run in 1978 because of the likeness issues. Being reprinted again now. I don't know why.
Oh, really?
And it actually comes out again in November this year. It'll be 80 pages. It'll come in two different editions, the facsimile edition, which reprints it at its original size of approximately 10 inches wide by 13.25 inches high. That's 80 pages, and that'll cost you $40. Wow. And then there's a $20 edition, which is smaller, but it's 96 pages, so it's got more pages in it. So
what do they leave out?
I don't know, actually, but yeah, it's kind of interesting. So there's no extras in the original, but basically what happens, the original publication, obviously Muhammad Ali was the champion, heavyweight championship, but by the time the actual book came out, Leon Spinks was the champion, and Ali only said yes, he'll be in this comic if he could uncover Superman's identity, which he did in the last few pages of this comic. So
he has standards.
Yeah, so what happens...
Chopper from MASH is on the cover. I'm so excited. Sorry.
So what happens? Clark Kent, Jimmy Olsen, and Lois Lane are walking around, I think in Harlem, and they stumble upon Muhammad Ali playing basketball with a few kids. They want to interview him in. It's actually Denny O'Neill who wrote it, I believe so. And he's actually got Muhammad Ali's kind of cadence and dialogue pattern down quite well. Neil Adams does all the art, so it's quite realistic.
The art's pretty awesome. They take advantage of the big...
They do. There's a lot of city scenes, and later on there's like bigger armada scenes where aliens are fighting and that kind of stuff. Superman's the only superhero who appears in it. So, basically this Earth gets invaded by this alien race called the Scrub. that's with two B's, not to be confused with the TV series.
Scrub is
a good thing. Because these people think that Earth's hostility as we evolve is going to cause them problems in the future. So they're basically like, we want to fight you, but we want to determine who Earth's greatest fighter is. And we think it's either Superman or Muhammad Ali. So Muhammad Ali trains Superman how to box. So Superman loses his powers under a red sun. So, and then the two of them have a fight to see who's going to represent Earth in battling this massive towering alien scrub creature.
Space Jam vibe from this.
Yeah, that's true. So Ali beats Superman to a pulp. He wins, and then Ali beats the alien to a pulp, and there's a bit of a coup, and the aliens kind of decide we don't want to invade Earth after all, and that kind of stuff. It's a pretty fun read.
We changed our minds in the end.
And there's... kind of Superman is like in disguise and all this kind of stuff. And
it's actually a really good looking comic.
It is a pretty good looking comic, and it ends really with the two characters. Well, one's not a character, one's a real life guy, but it ends with the two of them shaking hands saying, "Superman, we are the greatest."
There's only 72 pages in here, so maybe there's supplementary material.
There could be. Maybe in interviews or something in the reprint that comes out in November. So, Neil Adams' artwork, so obviously he knows how to draw figures and he's quite realistic. So, and I remember reading this thinking, this is awesome. This would have come out when I was two years old, but it is pretty impressive. The story is very 70s, obviously, but it does make the most of the big format. It's a fun read. It's one of those things that pops up on the internet as quite an oddity. Like, I can't believe comics got away with this kind of thing, but even...
this would have been so great to see on a spinner rack or in a shop or whatever, because it would have stood out so much.
True.
And I think it looks like it delivers on the story and the quality, because there's some... I guess Neil Adams' artwork is just, pretty...
He does good amazing work. So, it's pretty... I mean, it has some interesting things. Like Superman stops a tidal wave by clapping his hands together and that kind of stuff. Not like that, but yay, tidal waves! So that was kind of interesting, and especially in the big format, it made me realise how big comics could be, because it's not like we had CGI and stuff in our movies back in those days.
Man, did some good comics as a kid.
There's a lot of alien ships running around and stuff, so wow, that covers a lot of stuff, doesn't it?
I think we're about wrapped up. Man, our childhoods were different.
Yeah. Just like our adulthoods.
Yeah, well, I guess it affects what you like now. So if you're a young parent with kids, I guess, get them any comic. I don't think it really matters, does it?
Ask at your local comic book shop.
We both ended up okay.
Yeah.
I was reading Beavis and Butthead comics and I ended up okay.
That's true. All right, well, that is a harp-like induced trip down memory lane.
And there came a day. A day unlike any other. When Earth's mightiest heroes found themselves united against a common threat. To fight the foes no single superhero could withstand. On that day, the Avengers were born.
That was Samuel L. Jackson, who played Nick Fury, the eye-patched head of S.H.I.E.L.D. in the two Iron Man films, and he's going to appear in pretty much every Marvel superhero film from now on. That was the teaser trailer that I think was played at Comic-Con this year for the Avengers film, which Joss Whedon, Buffy creator, is directing. Mm-hmm. So that comes out in like 2012. The Captain America film is filming now. You can see on-set photos, actually, just been released online if you want to see what the Captain America movie costume looks like. So, yeah, basically that was Samuel L. Jackson. The actual, all the visuals, all it was just the A logo, the Avengers logo, like spinning around.
So you didn't
miss
anything, listeners?
No, so it works just as well as an audio clip. But that kind of inspired me to read this out. I'm no Samuel L. Jackson. I could wear an eye patch, but...
Oh, don't sell yourself short, Chris. You're very much a Samuel L. Jackson.
People stop me in the street and often tell me that.
It's uncanny.
Actually. So this is a 5-issue limited series that just finished, actually, written by Todd Casey with art by Phil Noto. Joe Casey with art by Phil Noto. Avengers The Origin, which has Hulk, Iron Man, Thor, Wasp and Ant-Man, basically as, you know, how the Avengers got together. And it's got this awesome speech by Thor right at the end. Now I'm going to try and read it out in my best Thor-like voice.
Okay, I'll put some backing music here. Hold on, there we go.
Bidabdu. Indeed, but let them tremble when the clarion call sounds. The revelation of our very existence will strike like the mightiest thunderclap. Our victories shall be the stuff of legend. Our triumphs shall echo throughout the nine worlds. 'Tis endeavours such as these where the warrior ideals of God and man intersect to produce something greater than the sum of its parts. On this day we have declared war, and we shall avenge the evils perpetrated by those who oppose us. We shall avenge them all. And then the next panel is Iron Man in his golden bucket-headed suit saying, good speech. Okay, well, we see. So, yeah, I like that. And that's interesting. Only Thor can kind of talk like that Shakespearean epic.
When's that film coming out, Thor?
Thor is, I think that's filming at the moment as well. So, yeah.
There was a trailer out.
There is a trailer out. Chris Hemsworth is playing Thor.
Australian actor, isn't he?
Actor.
Probably on Home and Away.
Anthony Hopkins as Odin. That's coming out next year as well, I believe. So the next couple of years are going to be a good time for Marvel film fans. Now we are going to talk about a web comic of the week.
Web comic of the week.
This week.
This web comic of the week has been nominated, I believe, for either a Harvey or an Eisner, whichever one has a web comic award. One of those two. I saw it before. The comic's called Hark, a Vagrant. It's a comic by Kate Beaton. Just look up Hark! A Vagrant. It's she takes kind of historical settings or famous historical events, and in her own style puts like a weird spin on them. Like there's a great one where it's all the Austen sisters.
Okay. Jane Austen and Emily, was it? Pride and Prejudice?
Oh, no, sorry, the Bronte sisters.
The Bronte, okay.
So there's more of those, yeah. The Bronte sisters. And they're all like checking out dudes and like, oh, check out that guy. Ooh, okay. Mysterious. And one of the Brontes wrote these very serious books. So she's like, guys, he's a total like, he looks like a douchebag. And they're like, shut the hell up. You know, it's pretty hilarious stuff.
Okay.
And she's Canadian, so there'll be some Canadian historical events. She's recently been finding all these paperback covers, you know, of old classic books.
Oh, okay.
And then you know how they used to have illustrations of someone looking through the mirror.
Yes.
So she'll take that picture as a starting point and then tell a little story of them looking in the mirror. And then,
that's interesting.
Yeah, it's pretty hilarious stuff. Check it out if you... she does the historical illustration stuff.
What's it called again?
Well.
Hark.
Hark, a Vagrant.
A Vagrant.
A Vagrant.
Cool. Awesome. Yeah. All right, well, that concludes our sixth episode.
What's the byline on this one? You normally have some witty...
Revenge of the Six?
Six. No, I like that. Revenge of the Six.
Secret Six.
Secret Six, yeah.
So we don't know what we're talking about next week, because that's how we live our life. We fly by the seat of our pants, baby. Don't hold us back. We can't be predicted.
Yeah. honey. I got nothing. I'm all talked out for this week.
As always, if you're listening to this on our website, you could also listen to us on iTunes. Just go to the iTunes Store podcast and search for Extra Sequential. Look for the blue plus sign. My blog is comicbookjesus.com.
Yep, and you can check out my work at purgeaudit.com. That's the music for the show there, except for the Merry Marvel Marching Band.
And the similar Jackson, but that's not really music, but you know.
His voice is like music to my ears.
Lyrical and stuff. Yeah. And if you want to shoot us an email, it's Chris, K-R-I-S, at comicbookjesus.com.
Tell us what you think.
Yeah. Even if you hate us, we'd still like to know. Just give us a reason why.
Send us your nostalgic comics. I want to hear what your first comic was that you read.
That's true.
Especially if it's something unusual.
I often find that once you get into comics early, you may like leave. Like I left when I was at uni. I left comics for a couple of years because I was kind of broke and stuff. But you always kind of go back in. And I find people that once you've started reading comics, it's kind of a lifelong
You can check out anytime you like, but you can never leave.
It's just like the mafia.
Yeah. Yeah. Someone will get that.
Yeah. Okay, I didn't, but you can email us if you did.
Win a prize.
Well, thanks for listening again. 7th episode next
week.
Thank
you, everyone.
Yep. Catch you later.
See ya.
Bye.
Now, let's all get back to work in the bullpen. And as for you, marvelous Merry Marchers, welcome from all of us to all of you. If you want to know how glad we are to have you with us, just you listen. Okay, let them hear it, gang. Whoa!